Welcome to The Ambitious Introvert, the leading growth and development podcast for the estimated 56% of us who recharge by going inwards. Our purpose is to help you manage your social battery and own your energy so you can reach your true potential in your business, your career, or your life. I'm your host, Emma Louise Parks, a former air traffic controller, entrepreneur, and a success coach with over 15 years' experience. I've supported hundreds of introverts like you who dream big and are ready to take action towards making those dreams a reality without compromising their energy in the process. Each week, my guests and I will be sharing tips, tricks, and hacks on how to build your resilience, master your mindset, and cultivate self-leadership. Skills that will help you reach your goals without trying to be someone that you're not. We'll also be sharing valuable lessons and insights from our own personal experiences, all focused on one thing: helping you own your energy to reach your potential. Hello, ambitious introverts. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Emma Louise. Today's episode is doubly exciting for me. Firstly, because I'm interviewing an amazing guest, Dr. Claire Emma Wild. Dr. Claire is a coach for quiet leaders, and she helps them to overcome people pleasing and imposter syndrome so that they can avoid burnout. Now, all of those topics, obviously super relevant to you in the audience, and especially so because the reason Claire's so passionate about her work is because of her own experience. She unconsciously people pleased to feel accepted for so long, and as well as that pushing away negative emotions that could have come from saying no, that she actually went through two periods of burnout. And after the second period, she changed her ways, she changed her habits, and she trained as a coach so that she could support other quiet leaders in really stepping into their leadership journey as a sensitive introvert. Now, obviously, super relevant topic for us sensitive introverts, but even more so because Dr. Claire has been my client for almost 2 years now. So as well as sharing all of her expertise on people pleasing and the way that she coaches her clients using somatics to really get to the root of the problem, we're also going to be talking about her own personal development journey. When Claire and I began working together, she was fresh out of coach school and literally zero business. And here we are 2 years later now. And what she has achieved even blows her own mind. It has been phenomenal. So I think this is just going to be a really great episode to, well, I know it's a really great episode because I was there when it was recorded, but I think it's going to be great to listen to. For those reasons, for the fact that you're going to be hearing her share so much more about people pleasing, how it affects the body, and some ways to start to overcome it that are introvert friendly rather than just jarring our nervous system by doing a complete 180. And also because Claire's sharing so much about her own journey, I talk so much about owning your energy and being able to master our mindset so we can really step into our self-leadership so we can achieve those things that we didn't even think were possible for us. And Claire is literally a living, breathing example of that with everything that she's done over the last few years. So I really hope that you enjoy this conversation. It was so fun for me to be able to ask Claire questions as a host rather than her coach. It was really interesting dynamic for us to flip, and we loved recording the episode. Do listen all the way till the end because Claire's way that she owns her energy is so simple and yet so effective. And I was thrilled that she chose this because she is so intentional now in her habits and her practices. The fact that she chose this one, which is one that I shared with her, and that she still uses it today, and it's something that is so quick and easy to implement, is just another great reminder that these things do not need to be hard. So thank you for joining us, and I hope that you enjoy our conversation. Well, this is a very different way of us meeting rather than on a client call. So thank you for, first of all, thank you for taking my very unsubtle prompts to pitch me to be on the podcast and actually pitching me to be on the podcast.
I'm sure we're going to get into that today. But yeah, it's brilliant to be here finally after all these years since I first heard the podcast.
It's so funny, actually. Let's talk about that for a minute, because I think this is interesting for people that are entrepreneurs as well, where we think our clients are going to come, you know, in certain ways and methods. But also for people that are just, you know, listening to a podcast because they're interested in personal development, to see how, you know, how far they can come. When I was first launching the Academy, which was then called Startup Scale Up, I talked about it on the podcast and I opened a wait list. And I had about 15 people on this wait list. It was about maybe 2 months before it was launching. And almost every name on the wait list I recognized from social media, or I, you know, interacted with them. And then your name popped onto the wait list. And I was like, oh, I don't know this person. I wonder where they're from. I don't know anything about them. And I sent you a video, because I sent everyone a video to say, thank you for joining the wait list. This, you know, we're probably going to launch in April. This is what's happening. And I remember it so well. You sent me a video back the same day and you went, your podcast has changed my life. It's literally like, I'm so grateful to you. And then you were like, can I send you a pot? And I was like, a pot? But it was like a pot. And I was like, of course you can send me a pot. And you send me a beautiful soap dish, which I use as a Palo Santo tray. It's in my bedroom. But that aside, you sent me this lovely video and you were just like, I'm joining the program. Like, it's a given. I'm signing up on day one. And I didn't know you existed. Until that moment, I didn't know that you were there listening to the podcast and getting so much value from it. Crazy. It's crazy how things happen. And, you know, you were sat in your shed, you've told me later on.
Yeah. Yeah, in my cold, damp shed making pottery. In my lovely neighbour, actually, they let me use their shed, but it's cold and it's damp and it's winter and I had gloves and hat and everything on, listening to the podcast, glazing these pots, going, oh my God, I just didn't know this whole, you know, there was this whole thing, you know, this is me, this is about me, oh my goodness, you know, the world is just opening up in front of me. And yeah, it changed my life. I remember one particular episode, but I just... I don't know how many back-to-back in that little shed.
I think it's funny. I think it's maybe an introvert thing because we like to go a little bit deeper. A lot of people find the podcast and they binge it. They'll say that. They're like, I've gone back to either day one, which, you know, is quite a long way now, or they've gone back to day one and downloaded the episodes that sound like they're going to resonate, and they will sit and binge and listen. I used to have a client who... I think she lived in Saskatchewan or somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Canada. And once a week, she'd drive to the nearest town, which was a good 2.5 hour drive. And she'd save podcasts up and like listen to them one after the other on that drive, because she loves to consume content that way. Maybe slightly more comfortable than your cold shed.
Maybe. I still do it though. I still listen to the podcast when I'm glazing, but I'm in a slightly more comfortable shed now.
I love it. And you're in a very different position, because back then you were training as a coach and going, I know I want to be a coach, but I've got no idea where to start. What do I want to do? What does starting a business look like? And here you are now, a regular at recording podcasts, business set up, coaching clients, all of the things, website, LinkedIn, marketing, which, you know, is, I feel like a proud mother when I see that kind of growth. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about your expertise, which I remember when you joined started Scale Up as it was, and on the first day when you said, I want to be a coach. I've almost finished my training and I want to work with quiet leaders because I see so much imposter syndrome and people pleasing holding them back. And I was like, yes, this is so needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's some things that, I mean, we know each other really well. So there are things that I've experienced, you know, as a leader, as a person, I think unknowingly that have held me back all through my life. And, you know, working on them with you through coaches has brought me, you know, to places I never even imagined. The things that you've just said, you know, from that time when I was sitting, painting my pots in the shed, I couldn't. If you'd have spoken to me then, it's like, you're going to be here now. It's like, I can't do that. I can't do that. How could I do that? I couldn't even see the steps. So yeah, to who'd be able to help people as leaders who understand how they're showing up for them, how they're holding them back, how they're maybe leading them to burnout and exhaustion and stress and feeling like they can't lead when we desperately need, like you said, quiet leaders. You know, the world so needs quiet leaders, but we're so focused on that extra ideal in terms of leadership of quick, fast moving all the time, quick, fast decisions all the time. You know, you need to lead like this, you need to be outgoing, you need to be on the game. And, you know, there's so many different brains out there. You know, there's the extrovert, quick thinking on your feet, loads of ideas, brains, but then there's our brains. You know, the introvert, quiet leader brains that think deeply, have amazing ideas, make tremendous connections, can work brilliantly with all these amazing ideas that extroverts come up with. But if we don't support that, if we don't take the time to digest it, to reflect it, to give ourselves that support as quiet leaders, we're just doing ourselves a disservice. And then, like I say, we end up exhausted. So yeah, just, I love it. And I think so many people as leaders just drop out, just give up, burn out, drop out, give up, you know, and it's such a shame.
And I love how passionate you are about it. And that is something shared by all of my clients. You know, it's very easy, I think, when you start in a business and people go, oh, choose a niche or an ideal client, you know, choose something that's popular or profitable and all of this. And it's like, no, choose the thing that you're actually passionate about. Choose the thing that you want to see the change in. And back through your career, you've been in numerous leadership positions. How was it for you before you had that? I'm going to say, first of all, before you had the awareness that you were a sensitive introvert and that you needed to do things a little differently?
Yeah, so it shows up in some really weird ways, and hopefully people will identify with this. But for me, it was, you know, I want to help people, but that in terms of people pleasing, it almost goes too far. It's not about being kind or being nice or being helpful. It's that need. So I didn't know I felt emotions more than anybody else. I didn't know I was more sensitive. There's that need with people pleasing to keep everybody happy, you know, to get that sort of mirroring of the positive emotion. You know, they're pleased because they want me to say yes. So I said yes, everybody's happy, yay. Oh, but actually I didn't want to say yes because I can't do that. It's too much. And then there's also, I want to avoid negative feelings. So, you know, the thought of somebody being angry, disappointed in me, and I choose that carefully, in me, because that's what I believed. I was causing that emotion. So I was responsible for their emotions. You know, I don't want to feel that because I didn't know then, but not only was I seeing that in them, so there was that fear of rejection, of not being liked or loved or appreciated or respected, but also I was feeling it myself, you know, this anger, this disappointment, and it felt intolerable. So, you know, it served its purpose, but the payoff was really difficult because what it means is I don't, you know, would do too much, take on too many responsibilities, volunteer for everything. I remember, and I've written about it a couple of times. It's like, I was sitting there one day going, well, I don't have a problem saying no. I don't, you know, that's not my problem. And then I thought about it, but went, but that's because I've already volunteered. You know, no one's even asked the question. I've actually volunteered because I've seen what needs doing and I've gone, oh, I can do that.
I love that awareness. That was one of the best things when you wrote that post, because it's, yeah, even you're never in that situation to be like, oh, I get the opportunity to turn someone down because you've jumped in to save the day ahead of time so that everyone's happy.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out at all. And I couldn't figure out, you know, and you get in this juxtaposition, and I think other people will identify this as well, where you go, so you're trying to please people at work, but actually what you're doing is not spending time at home with whoever's important to you at home. So you please someone and displease somebody else. So you end up in this horrible bit in the middle where you don't know what to do, when you don't know how to make a decision about anything, which, you know, I burnt out twice, as you know, and it's not surprising. I just, you know, kept pushing myself with that and imposter syndrome making me feel like I was a fraud. Those two work, well, beautifully or horribly together to just keep driving you.
So where did can you remember the moment that you went, oh, introversion, high sensitivity, empath, like whichever one it was in particular, do you remember being confronted with the information about something and going, oh, now everything makes sense?
Yeah, but in stages, I think.
That's so interesting, because I interviewed David Hall for the podcast that it may have aired before this one, and he said the same thing. He said it was like things kept adding up in layers and layers. Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, I first had a really good leadership course. I'm sure everyone's been at rubbish ones, but this one was amazing and came out Myers-Briggs INFJ, which is, I know you identified that as well. And INFJ, it's like, oh God, that's the most weird, in inverted commas, of all the types, an INFJ, but they have qualities, but they're different qualities to everybody else. Well, that's okay. But I didn't feel that. Cognitively got it. And then it's the steps. You know, a friend said to me, are you sure you're not highly sensitive? And then it starts to sort of peter. And then I read, you know, Stephen King's book. Of course I do. I'm an introvert. And then when my friend said that, who's amazing, you know, she's a businesswoman, she's a ultra runner, and it's like, well, hang on, this doesn't seem so bad because she's amazing. So I read this highly sensitive book. Does it mean I cry all the time? I don't seem to. Read the highly sensitive book. And I thought, ooh, but still it didn't feel it. And I think my empathy started coming up in my coach training. I have this really cool story, actually. I don't know if we've got time for it. But
we've always got time for a cool story. Bring it on.
So I trained during COVID and selling coaching across the interweb, as we're doing right now. So you're all virtual. And I was coaching someone who's now a really good friend of mine. And my legs wouldn't stop jumping up and down underneath the desk. And that never happens. And it was the weirdest thing in the world. And I coached her through this. And I was like, then my other leg started doing it. And it was like I was running under the desk. And I thought, well, this is weird. I can't tell her this because it's weird. And then I coached her through and I said, you know, just started the coaching session. And, you know, I said, how are you today? You know, how's your energy? How are you feeling? She said, I am so wound up. I'm so stressed. My legs. I've been pedaling all day. And of course, I couldn't see this. I couldn't see any of it because you just see somebody's torso and you can't see anything else. And I was like, okay, that's really weird. And it took me ages to process that. And it's like, not only am I picking up on people's emotions, but I'm actually physically picking up on what they're doing that I can't see. So, you know, that kind of thing, and then added up. And I think not until I, you know, coming circuitously back to the podcast, not until I think when I heard you and the way you pointed me through the podcast, but also the ways that you support yourself, did I actually take it all on board together and not only cognitively accept it, but I think of it as something that I needed to support rather than something I needed to live with, I think. And that was the stages. It's like, okay, I'm this. Okay, I'm this. Okay, I'm this. I don't really like it. What can I do to live with it? And then there's that point where you go, actually, not about living with it. It's about being my very best, which means I need to support myself in a different way and see what happens.
And that's something that I've always tried to be very clear on in the podcast and, you know, in my other content, that it's not like, oh, well, here's some tips to survive as a highly sensitive introverted empath. It's like how to thrive and how to manage your energy or own your energy, as, you know, I'm now using, because we don't realize quite often how much agency we have over it. And I know that I remember you saying you were really excited in the early episodes because you were like, no, weighted blankets and all of like energy work and all of these different things that you could like immediately see how they would support you in your nervous system.
Yeah, totally. I've got two weighted blankets. One's far too heavy, but they're absolutely brilliant. And you can, you know, it's that instant, but also, and I remember you saying very early on, it's small things daily. And seeing how that adds and adds and adds. And, you know, not necessarily do you get an incremental improvement, but all of a sudden, at some point, you realize, oh God, things are really different for me now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that looking back. And I think a lot of people will, don't want to use the word give up, but they won't give things long enough to see the benefit. This happens quite a lot. You know, people say with meditation, because they say, maybe, you know, 90 days of a consistent meditation practice and suddenly you'll go, oh, my mind's a lot calmer. But people will do it for a week and then go, oh, I don't feel any better. Or going to the gym, because people will start, you know, with good intentions, New Year's resolution. Oh, well, I'm not thin yet, so I'm just going to stop going. And it can be really hard to put those practices in place. But I've seen definitely in you, like we've been coaching together almost 2 years now, seen those instances where you've gone, I feel like I've got this particular thing now, like it feels different, not just I think differently about it, but it feels different.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And often with those sticky things, it's about doing them, isn't it? And doing them when they're uncomfortable, thinking about specific things, not energy things, but yeah, doing them while they're uncomfortable. And then there comes a point where you go, oh, that's just normal now. And actually, not only is it normal now, but it's having an effect elsewhere in my life because I've gained that confidence for doing it. That thing that was really scary, I'm now doing it. That thing that was uncomfortable, like meditation, actually, it's okay now. And that meditation is also having an effect somewhere else.
And another way I look at this is when we first began working together, there was a lot of support in that container. There were calls 3 weeks out of four. There was Slack. And then you transitioned into a one-on-one where we had monthly calls and, you know, Slack access. And now we've reduced back to monthly calls with just voice note access in between. And I think that's really important because we want to create, especially as sensitives, the change and the habits and all of that, but without the codependency. So yes, of course, you know, the vehicle of coaching is helpful the same way as when you coach your clients, that's helpful, but helpful in an empowering way that you can take it and run with it as well. So I think that's just really important to say, like, it's not about having someone to tell you what to do. It's about implementing, running with what you're learning, trying it out for yourself, and then, you know, growing your mindset to be able to show up for yourself and take those actions regularly.
Yeah, totally. Totally, because we are all the experts on ourselves. And it is, and that's the thing, the premise for coaching for me and for you, it is about empowering people so that they are so much better equipped than when they come to you. You know, to go out there with me, you know, people pleasing and imposter syndrome so that they can, you know, stop people pleasing, put those practices in place, keep practicing, keep trying, noticing, so that they don't need me anymore. You know, they have those practices to go and yeah, it will come up again. It always does when you push yourself, you know, you push your comfort zone, you do things that are scarier than you ever would have thought because you're pushing, you know, you're testing yourself, you're challenging yourself. So you're pushing it more and it will come up, but then they know how to deal with it. Oh, it's coming up again. Oh, it's because I've, you know, got another promotion. Maybe I'm trying a new skill again. You know, I'm in a new team, whatever it is. All things are a little bit stressful for me. You know, something else has changed in my life. My stress levels are up. I'm just starting to do that again.
Yeah. And it's like the another level, another devil, because things change and we, you know, slip back into habits. But what I love about the type of coaching that you do as well and the type of people that you work with, obviously, because they're quiet leaders like myself, is bringing in the somatic piece. Because when we have that brain-body connection, that's so much more powerful than, oh, go and do, here's a list of things to go and do to regulate yourself. It's actually like, here's how to physically actually feel it in your body and be able to process and regulate things. Have you found that to be super effective with sensitives?
Yeah. And in two ways, I think it's not only the kind of NLP aspect of noticing your emotions. Where is that when that's right for you? Because it's not right for everybody. And I'm very much trauma aware, but it's that feeling of, you know, where is that? What does it feel like? Understanding how it is so it doesn't get so scary so you can feel it. Because very often as sensitives, if we haven't dealt with, which is, you know, my experience, I haven't dealt with those emotions, if you haven't, you know, understood what to do with them, it's the case they are too much, so you push them away and push them down. And learning to understand what the message is, to be able to feel them in a way that's almost one removed. So, you know, how do they feel? What do they have a color? This is going to sound weird if you haven't done it before, but it's so powerful because it's a way without being overwhelmed to feel the emotion and sometimes to take it and look at it and really understand and process it and then move on from it, understand what it's taught you and move on. But also it's about noticing on a different level, less NLP, about actually, when I'm saying, so we'll take people, when I'm saying yes and I mean no, or I really am going to regret this or resent this person or be angry. What's my body doing? Am I, you know, are my shoulders all clenched forward? You know, am I leaning in to please this person? Okay, so if I'm in that situation, so really noticing that and how does that feel? And, you know, when we're coaching, I can reflect that to them as well about, you know, I've noticed your shoulders doing that. What's that about? And then taking that step once you've understood what you do and it's like a habituation. What happens if you lean back and someone asks you that question or I ask you that question again and your shoulders are open or you're leaning back from the screen? You know, a lot of people are still working virtually and you lean back from the screen. What does that change? So that awareness. And then also then when you're changing, so I know we'll talk about it a little bit, my practices for understanding what it feels like to say no or maybe or yes, when you mean no or you don't mean no, when you need some space, so you want to say maybe, or actually when you really mean yes. Because often when you people please, you don't know how it feels when all of you wants to say yes, because you say yes all the time. So then what does it mean? You know, what's your trigger for going, actually, I really want to say yes here. So that can be really powerful. And practicing saying no with moving your body at the same time, brings your body and your brain on for that, firstly, awareness. And then secondly, you know, that practice about that awareness of how you feel, but also, okay, when I say no, it feels uncomfortable, but I can get comfortable with that. I can do this every day and get comfortable, which means I can do it on my own. Then I can do it with really easy situations, and then I can do it with the hard stuff later on.
You touched on something really important there, is like having that space to practice it and to feel into it and explore. I think a lot of traditional leadership rhetoric, shall we say, like you say, is more extrovert based of like think, act, go, do it, and not really giving us that space. As an aside, I will say a couple of things about our coaching relationship. The first is you self-coach this perfectly, because sometimes I'll ask you a question and I can be quite a tough coach, I'll admit that. And you'll fold your arms and then you go, oh, look at that. I folded my arms. What does that mean? Like, you're so aware now of your own body, or you'll be like, oh, I've just done this, or, you know, how interesting. Whereas, you know, a lot of people and like you previously wouldn't have that awareness because we're so in our heads. We're so like thinking about the right thing. Whereas you now are so in tune with your body through that type of somatic work and yoga and things that you will go, oh, how interesting. Look at that. I've just folded my arms. And the other thing that I would say about our sessions and, you know, most of my clients, there is a lot of silence. Mm. People are afraid of the silence, but actually, as sensitive introverts, it's probably, if you're doing this kind of work, it's what you need. And you're not afraid to sit there and take a few minutes, if I ask you a question, to go, let me really feel into this, rather than give me the answer you think I want to hear, or like the good girl answer.
Yeah. And it does. It is practice. And I do use yoga a lot. And I've done some other healing that yoga has really helped. And yeah, that's freed up my body as well. But yeah, and it is the practice and the space. And that, and I love that you touched on that, because, you know, around people pleasing, there's a lot of rhetoric about just say no.
Mm.
Just say no. No is a complete sentence. And it's like, you know, for quiet leaders, it's like, what? Oh my goodness. What do you mean? So I'm going to go to my boss that I said yes to. And, you know, all this time, and I've stayed late every Friday night finishing off the stuff. What? I just say no. No is a complete sentence. So it's like, God, I'm going to get sacked. You probably won't get sacked. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that's going through your head. And that permission to say, actually, we are different. You know, there's a reason this is hard. It's because it's hard for introverts, sensitives, empaths, who are people pleasers, or any one of those. And that we've done this all our lives for a really good reason. It's served a purpose. You know, it's allowed us to feel accepted, liked, loved, to get that emotional chaos that we haven't got somewhere else. You know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's fine. It's okay. It's done something. now we're going to change it. Well, we can't just do it like that. It's too hard for our nervous system. So taking that, breaking it down, this is about small steps, repeating the steps, repeating the steps, repeating the steps until that first step gets easy. And then the second step gets easier, and then the third step gets easier. But scaring ourselves to death and then even gritting our teeth and crunching our jaws and just go, no, it doesn't really work.
It's so funny. Like the journey for, they want you to go from jumping in and volunteering before anyone's even asked you to just going, no, it's a complete sentence. And like zero psychological safety there whatsoever. But it's really interesting that you brought up repetition. And you know, this is a lot of our work together has been like this. And I always say, like, repetition doesn't sound very sexy, but it is the thing that works.
Yeah, it doesn't, does it? It doesn't
really
sound very interesting.
No, it sounds really boring because everyone wants something instantly because they used to order in from Amazon and it's there the next day, or they want to watch a movie. So you just press Netflix and download it and it's instant, and that instant gratification. And then you can make incredible change in your life like you have done over the last 2 years, but it requires repetition. And a lot of people just check out and they go, oh, it didn't happen fast enough. Like the meditation thing, like we were saying, didn't happen fast enough. But actually you're saying this is a skill that you can cultivate. And just because your brain and body is wired to say yes automatically because that's created safety and has worked for you, you can absolutely learn to say no, but you don't do it in 2 seconds. There is going to be repetition and there's going to be a practice. And I just think that's a really valuable lesson in anything, not just people pleasing.
Yeah, totally. I love the work on this. And as you know, I love neurobiology and because I'm a scientist by trade. And I love just thinking about your brain, and our brains are so amazing. And they change, you know, to say this is just how I am, we know that's not true anymore. We know the brain can change. We can change the brain. You know, there's all the scans that people have shown for meditators and yogis whose brains change. And even people that I think, is it 60 days or 80 days, is it, that John Kabat-Zinn did? You know, your brain changes. You can see it with scans that this happens. And, you know, this neuroplasticity is an amazing thing. But it takes time. You know, it's like we've done this way. There is a pathway that you use that is super quick and efficient. You just say yes. And it's like all the roadblocks have been taken out on that road, all of them. You know, there's no bridges, there's nothing. It's a straight motorway. And then you're saying, so because your brain's lazy, it's going to do things the fastest it possibly can in the most efficient way. So that's what you've done all the time. That's what you do. And now you're saying, I want to do something different. And there isn't a pathway there yet. You know, it isn't there. And we know that habits take about 60 odd days, 66 days, I think it is, to become automatic. That new pathway has got to start working, whatever the habit is, whatever the change you're making. And it isn't a motorway. And there's all kinds of roadblocks and holes and bridges and, you know, traffic lights and all kinds of things. And it's hard because there's no pathway there. You know, even from this neurobiology perspective, there's no pathway. So we have to just keep practicing, opening it up until one day it's getting close to being as efficient as the other one. It may, and then one day it gets more efficient and the old pathway doesn't get used anymore. So that doesn't become so easy to use. And you automatically, and that's when the habit starts, you automatically, and I'm doing these arm motions in front of me on a podcast, but hey, never mind.
I do that all the time, forever using my arms and hands. I'm like, no one can.
I know.
It adds to the energy. It's fine.
And then your new pathway is the default one. And that's the one that you use. You use the saying no in a very polite way automatically, but that takes time. You know, there is a biological change in your brain that takes time. Once you do it and you keep doing it, it's there. And our brains are just wonderful.
They are. It's fascinating. And obviously those pathways that are deeper serve us really well, like brushing our teeth every day and, you know, making a cup of tea or coffee without having to call up a list of exactly what to do. Yeah. Because, you know, we can do that super quickly because we've got a really deep pathway. I got a story about this actually when I was a controller. So aircraft fly from point to point. So they fly a route and their route is programmed in and it's points, and these points are made up of letters. So they're words. Some of them are places. Some of them are just made up words. And there used to be a point and it changed its name. This happens sometimes. They, you know, changed the route, changed some airspace, and it changed its name. So for the first few weeks, you're like, oh, and you're really having to read it every time, whereas before you would be saying it. And it has been about, oh my gosh, it must have been months, if not a year, that this point had changed. And I was quite busy and I was looking somewhere else and I said, route direct. And I said the old point name. And the aircraft came back and said, sorry, could you spell that for us? And the guy next to me was like, that hasn't existed for ages. But it was just amazing how, because I wasn't looking, I was still in that, you know, that old pathway that I'd been using for 6 years or whatever was deeper than the one that I'd been using for 6 months. I just slipped back into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd use that for such a long time.
Yeah.
And it's still
day in,
there.
Day
that's
out.
The thing.
Oh, it's still there now. And that's the one I think of rather than the other one, because I used it for so much longer.
Yeah. And for me, that's why it's important as well when we are changing, when we're practicing doing something new. It's important to forgive ourselves when we could revert, because your pathway hasn't gone. You're building a new one, but the old one's still there. So when you revert, it's like, rather than giving yourself a hard time or beating yourself up, it's like, that's okay. It's okay I did that. That's in my brain. It's been there forever. It did, you know, it was there for a really good purpose. I was taking care of myself. It's okay. I'll start again. That's all right.
I would love to know, let me think how to word this effectively.
Ooh.
What is your relationship with saying no like today in comparison to how it used to be?
Ooh, that's a really good question. That's a really good question. So it used to terrify me. And I used to have all of that stuff about, you know, I was, you know, saying no, what will people think? You know, they'll what will they think of me? I'm really unkind. You know, I should be helpful. And, you know, they might not speak to me again if I say no to my friends, or they won't want to be my friend again. Or, you know, it really brought up a lot of negative emotions around saying no. And I often get in that decision paralysis thing that we coaches talk about, which basically means you don't know how to make up your mind, because you're trying to please 14 people in one go. And you can't make your mind up because you're not trusting your own judgment, which, you know, for my clients with me, you know, I have good judgment. I get that now. But when you're trying to please everyone rather than trusting your judgment, it's a nightmare. So, and I'd also, yeah, get quite resentful when I'd said yes, but, you know, I just get this gripping in my body when I wanted to say no, and just completely overthink it as well. Totally overthink it. You know, I could go around in circles making a decision about something and all the pros and cons. And how was I going to say no? That was the other thing.
Oh, interesting.
How was I going to say no? And thinking about that. But nowadays, I think the thing is, I think there's still a pause. So it's not like I say no to everything. And I used maybe quite a lot to, you know, let me think on that and giving myself that time, because it's not just the thing I don't want to do. And I think people will resonate with this. It's actually often for me now, it's things I might actually want to do, but for myself and to support myself, I probably don't really, I don't need to do them, and they're going to exhaust me, and I need downtime, or, you know, I need that space, or whatever it is. So I think I've given myself a lot of maybe time, but certainly in work as well, it's also adding in, so the soft no, because how often at work do you say no?
Never. As a complete sentence.
I am not doing that ever. You know, it's that, you know, I'm so much better at saying, no, I can't do that for then, or we can't do that for then. We'll come back to you on that. Or we can't do it for this week, but we can do it for next week. Or is that actually our responsibility? I'll talk to somebody else from the team. So, you know, there are ways of saying no that are not, absolutely not, no. So, and I don't think, you know, the old pathway is still there, but I'm trying to think of the last time I said yes, and then either felt furiously resentful, or like it's in a position that I could do. And I can't actually think of one. And that's really interesting. I can't, because I could have, you know, a year ago told you, like, yeah, I did this, I said yes to this, and I'm so exhausted, or, oh, if, you know, I said, yeah, I can't think of any. So it has changed a lot. And like I say, it's not about just going and being an absolute cow.
Say no to everything.
And giving a reason. And I don't believe in this no is a complete sentence, because certainly with my personal life, there have been, like I say, there are things that I would really like to do, but it's more, I explain now, you know, no, I can't, I, no, sorry. I'm not going to do that because I need this time, because I've had a busy week, or I'm planning something on the Monday where I'm going to be in meetings all day. So I need the Sunday for downtime and to be on my own and to get that space. And that is actually the toughest, I think. Not necessarily it's the people that you love, that taking care of yourself, that supporting yourself. When you do want to please them, you know, you want to go and spend time with whoever it is in your family or your friends, and actually your body, your sensitivity, your introversion is saying, actually, if I want to be at my best, the answer is no. And I think that's the toughest, but I've learned if you explain it, people are amazing. And if they're not amazing, well, I haven't come across anyone that hasn't accepted that and understood it. So, yeah.
I'm going to quote Dr. Seuss now without looking at it. So this could be dangerous. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind.
That's perfect, because I just read that last night, bizarrely.
Look at that. Were you reading Dr. Seuss? I think it was The Cat in the Hat.
Perfect. I just love that quote.
It's so true. Yeah. And, you know, I think of that often to say, if I can say, nah, like too much. I talked about this in the podcast a while ago, because I'd had a very busy November with socializing, because a lot of people were in from overseas, and some friends wanted to catch up in December, and I would love to see them. But I was like, no, November has been too busy. I've been to London too many times. I'm tired. I need some downtime. So as much as I would love to see you, can we schedule it in for January? And they were all absolutely fine, because they understood that that's how my energy works.
Yeah. And I think setting that example, if that's a word, with friends, but actually, you know, sharing that and being okay with it, it's surprising, firstly, like you say, how much okay they are with it, but also how it helps other people to do that as well. And if you can share, they can do the same. You know, they don't have to say yes all the time when A, they don't want to, or they can't, or they need that time, or whatever else it is. And I think it's so permission giving. It's like that ripple effect.
Mm.
We can share. And, you know, and everything that you said, there's nothing horrible about that. No, it's, you know, I want to see you. I'd love to see you. But it's, you know, my energy needs replenishing and I've been too busy. I'll see you then a different time.
I'm laughing because somebody invited me into a group WhatsApp chat the other day and I said no. And they were a bit like, oh. And I just explained, I said group chats generally, it was quite a big chat. And I said, they generally don't work very well for me and my energy. And I find all the notifications quite overwhelming. So no, but if there's anything important that I need to know, if someone can just message me. And someone else that was there, that was in the chat, looked at me and they were like, oh, I wish I'd have thought of that. Because, you know, people just feel like, oh, well, I've got to go in or do these things. But that's, that is one that particularly drains me. You know, I'm very tight around my phone usage anyway. And I was just like, no, and it's no offense. I'm sure it's a lovely chat. And apparently people put pictures of cats in it, which I would very much appreciate. But for my energy, it's better for me to say, no, thank you, please don't, because I'm not going to be active in it, because even opening it up is going to overwhelm me.
What a wonderful thing to say that someone else said that. And, you know, funny enough, I was thinking back to some training I did, some coach training that was virtual with a major company, but there were like 300 people on the call. And what I found in the end is I didn't listen to the live stuff. I needed to listen to the replays because the chat came off.
I shouldn't
get rid of the chat. And I just couldn't concentrate. And I was completely overwhelmed, you know, an hour and a half of wonderful training on coaching, on somatic coaching. I was like, I just can't do it. I cannot do this. It's for the record. I was like, yeah, I can listen to the recordings.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And that's, you know, the kind of self-discovery, I think, that a lot of us go through in understanding what works well for our energy. So before we wrap up, you have touched on, you know, the somatic piece quite a lot. It's obviously an important part of the work you do. It's been an important part of your transformation as well. Tell us a little bit about the resource that you have created to help us say no.
Yeah. Thank you. So I created a video. It's a 5-minute practice, and this is about confidently saying no, even when it's scary. So it's the somatic practice. It's really easy, and it is about three things. You know, firstly, that understand, you know, getting comfortable with the discomfort of saying no, moving our bodies at the same time when we say, when we're saying no. So we're really getting into that, that body brain connection, and also recognizing when we want to say no. So how does it feel in our body? Because it might, it's very likely, I will be really surprised if it doesn't feel really uncomfortable because we're not used to saying no. So it's going to feel uncomfortable. So I take you through it on a video, how to do it, what it's for, and then the, and then take that away, practice that on your own in private. Unless you want to do it in public, that's fine. Yeah, repetition. Keep doing it just three times. Keep doing it on your own. And then the idea then is that you take that into that feeling, that ability to say no in all the ways that we've said. The word doesn't, it's not no on its own. You know, you take the words, you make different words around it, but it is about saying no. And then practice that in the low stakes situations, situations that aren't stressful. They don't overwhelm you. And then keep doing that. Keep doing it, practicing at different levels, and then just build up then to the areas where you find it really tricky to say no in. But it is, it's stepwise on your own, low stakes situations, and then building up to that difficult situation. And I'll also got some reflections as well that when you sign up for the video, I'll send in a few days just for to help you really dive into it.
I'll pop the link in the show notes, and anyone that has any kind of resistance to saying no to things, definitely download this. The benefits of being a coach is that you get to see all of your clients' work before it gets released out into the world. So I know this is this is wonderful. So thank you for sharing that. I'll pop that and all of your other links as well in the show notes where listeners can connect with you. But before I let you go, I would love to know, and I know there are many ways that you do this, but what is one way in particular that you make sure you own your energy so that you can perform your best?
So I thought about this and all the complicated ways that I can talk about. And, you know, the most simple thing I come back to was a really early exercise that you gave me that I've just expanded a bit, which is lying flat on the floor. And it's really simple. And we started off, and what I do now is I lie flat on the floor in a yoga mat. I started off with 5 minutes, just noticing, and I use that as a meditation. So I just notice my breath, notice the thoughts that come up, the sounds in the room, whatever I'm feeling in my body. I keep trying to bring, so I do use it like a meditation. I keep coming back to my breath all the time, but it starts with 5 minutes and I'll use it really flexibly. I might do it for 5 minutes. I might do it for half an hour. I might do it for 15 minutes, which is kind of my go-to. But when I feel disorientated, a little bit lost, I know I haven't done it. And for me, doing that, even for 5 minutes a day, really grounds me, brings me back to myself all the time. And like I say, if I haven't done it, I know I haven't done it. And it's so simple. And I'm sure people think, well, that's dead easy. It is until you try it and keep yourself. If you're not used to keeping yourself still and your thoughts still, or well, you can't keep your thoughts still, that's the whole point. You notice them, they keep moving. Keeping yourself still and noticing your thoughts for 5 minutes, it can be quite tricky, but there's something for me about having your body flat on the floor, that grounding on the floor, and then that adding in that meditation. It's just beautiful.
It's interesting, isn't it, that sometimes it's the simplest things that make the biggest difference. And I think a good indicator of whether something's working or not is that when you stop doing it, you notice, and it's that, oh, I haven't done it for a few days. I remember introducing that, and I remember the call afterwards, and I remember another lady that was on the program with you, I won't say names for confidentiality, going, this is life changing. Like, I never thought that I never thought that just lying on the floor would have such a profound difference. One of my clients, she has to do it first thing in the morning because she's got kids, you know, she's very busy. And she'll get up and lie on the floor. And she had her husband's like, "You just got up. Why are you lying down again?" And she's like, "This is a different lying down. This isn't like lying down in bed. This is like my grounding lying down."
Yeah. And you know, I think it helps some of my joints and things relax as well, because you don't often do that on a hot, because I use a hard floor.
Yeah.
The lying on a hard floor, you don't do that because you're in bed and you're supported. And I can really feel the work I'm doing physically. It benefits that as well. You know, that letting go, it's like a yin yoga doing absolutely nothing. It's amazing.
It is. It's like releasing into the earth, isn't it? And allowing yourself to be held by the earth. So I love that you chose that one. Thank you. And thank you. Thank you for pitching. And thank you for coming on here today and sharing all of your beautiful wisdom with us.
It's been lovely to chat to you. And what a different way to chat. It's been brilliant.
I know. Thank you. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. I hope that you're feeling expanded to what's possible for you, motivated to take action, and inspired about how you can start to own your energy. I share even more tools and resources on my Introverts Only email newsletter. By signing up, you not only get early access to the Ambitious Introvert products and services, but you also get brand new podcast episodes delivered straight to your inbox every Monday, meaning you'll never miss your weekly dose of introvert-friendly inspiration. Sign up now at theambitiousintrovert.com/newsletter or click the link in the show notes. See you next week.